Senator Giesel, Representative Josephson, Senator Stedman, Representative Foster, and Vice Chair Bishop, and myself, Representative Chris Tuck. We do have a quorum to conduct business. I'd like to thank Lori Rowland from Records and Reese and Doug from the Legislative Information Office for facilitating our meeting here today. Our first order of business is approval of the minutes. Senator Bishop.
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the minutes of the May 15th and August 16th, 2019 meetings as presented.
Any objections? Okay, hearing and seeing no objections, the minutes from May 15th and August 16th, 2019 are approved. Looking over for today's agenda, we have Alaska Division of Legislative Audit Compensatory Time Policy, consideration of RPLs, and then we will be going into executive session. We'll be talking about the preliminary audit release with the Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission's Sunset Audit, Board of Parole's Sunset Audit, the Medical Board's Sunset Audit, and then the Board of Game Regulatory Process Special Audit. We'll also be looking into the Tustamina Audit Request approved from February of 2014, and that should be... And we're going to be probably taking up the personnel matter as well underneath in executive session. For the time being, the next order of business, I would like to have Chris Curtis, our Legislative Director, brief the committee regarding the proposed changes to the Alaska Division of Legislative Audit Compensatory Time Policy. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Compensation Time Policy. Thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor, and I'm responsible for the Division of Legislative Audit. You should have a memo dated October 9th from me regarding proposed changes to the comp time policy for Ledge Audit. So Ledge Audit has always had a comp time policy. Well, since I started in 1992, it's allowed a maximum of 4 weeks to be accrued during a 12-month period. The 4 weeks have been expressed in terms of hours, so 150 hours at the 37.5-hour work week. And as you know, the maximum hour or the standard hour work week for supervisory auditors was increased to 40 hours a week last April. So I need approval to tweak the comp time max allowed for and change, instead of being 150 hours, change it to 4 weeks. So it can be applied across all employees in legislative audit, and the 4 weeks would be equivalent to 160 hours for those on a 40-hour work week and 150 hours for those on a 37.5-hour work week.
Questions from committee members? And I failed to recognize we have Speaker Edgman with us, and Senator Coghill will share for the Senate.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman.
Maximum accumulation of hours. Say someone doesn't use those hours for 2 or 3 years.
Yes, through the chair. The rule is you have to accrue it and use it within 12 months.
Thank you.
If you don't use it, it goes away.
Representative Josephson, through the chair, Ms. Curtis, I assume that you or your deputy has discretion to say to an employee, you know, we're going to honor this, but it doesn't mean you can take 2 months off or 8 weeks in succession and take a worldwide trip or something like that, right? You would be able to say you've earned this comp time, but you can't add to it your regular leave.
Through the chair, everyone is required, all state employees are required to take a minimum amount of time off a year of regular leave. So that's a 2 week minimum. That can be waived by a written notice of the head of the agency. So if my staff cannot take all of their comp time that they've earned, whatever that may be, plus the 2 weeks, then if I've denied them the ability to do that, I will give them a written notice of denial so they don't lose their actual leave. But this comp time policy has It doesn't really reflect, I don't take that in consideration whether I approve or deny leave, regardless of what leave they're using, whether it's regular leave or comp time leave. sometimes my employees cannot take leave during my busy time. Their leave is restricted, and they're actually required to work extra each week in order to meet our audit deadlines. But I do try to allow audit staff to take their 4 weeks plus their minimum 2 weeks. It's been difficult over the last few years, but going forward, we hope to allow that.
Any questions? Any discussion? Okay. Anything you'd like to add, Ms. Curtis? Okay. Vice Chair Bishop.
I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the proposed changes to the Alaska Division of Legislative Audit Compensatory Time Policy to allow for up to 160 hours comp time annually to align with the change to the 40-hour work week approved by the committee during our April 12, 2019 meeting.
Okay, and without objection, the committee has authorized the proposed changes to the Alaska Division of Legislative Audit Compensatory Time Policy to allow for up to 160 hours of comp time annually. Okay, the next item that we have on our agenda is the RPLs. I believe we have David Keel online to help brief the committee regarding the FY20 RPLs on today's agenda. Mr. Keel, are you on the phone?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. If you can just speak a little bit louder as you do your presentation.
I'll try that. Is that, I got a microphone that stands up straight, so would you like me to just brief one at a time and then leave time for discussion to go through all five of them?
Let's go ahead and take up one at a time in case people have discussions. And just to, for everyone's information, we have the Department of Natural Resources, Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission. I'm sorry. We have about four or five RPLs, and I was going to go through them real quick. We have the U.S. EPA multipurpose grant. We have equitable sharing program for the Department of Corrections. We have Alaska's Comprehensive Literacy State Development Program through DEED. We have the Fairbanks PM2.5 non-attainable area voluntary heating device change-out program. And then we also have the Whittier Tunnel fire truck replacement. So that's the ones that we'll be going over today. If you don't mind, just go ahead and take them one up at a time.
All right. For the record, I'm David Teal, Director of the Legislative Finance Division. The first RPL is number 08-2020-0105, and it's a request by the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission for $51,200 of federal authorization. That's to receive and spend a grant from the EPA, Federal Environmental Protection Agency, to perform high-priority oil field inspections and mechanical integrity testing of Class II injection and disposal wells. Those inspections and testing are in compliance with the Underground Injection Control Program that's authorized under the Safe Drinking Water Act, and DEC oversees that program on behalf of the EPA and has an agreement in place to witness at least 50% of the tests. This RPL supplements existing authorization and provides a total of $169,200 of federal receipts for the underwater injection control program. And the federal funding will offset the expenditures of AOGC receipts for the program, for the activities. We don't see any technical problems with the RPL.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, if you want to walk us to the next one.
Next one is number 20-2020-0050. It's Department of Corrections, Population Management, Institution Director's Office. They're requesting $150,000 of federal receipts authorization. It's for the Equitable Sharing Program, which provides the department with a share of assets seized during operations when the department has assisted federal law enforcement agencies seizing assets. At the time of the posting of the RPO, we had several questions that weren't answered to our satisfaction. And honestly, the questions had more to do with curiosity than any technical problems. We just didn't quite understand how the program worked. And you may want to ask some questions of the department. Sylvan Robb, the admin service director, is in the room here. What those questions did for us was highlight the fact that the department had requested insufficient federal authorization in the past and left federal receipts unspent a few years ago. That issue was addressed in the FY20 budget program. They added about $3 million worth of additional federal receipt authority. And we didn't really see a sense of urgency for this RPO. The existing receipt authority is probably sufficient to absorb the RPL receipts, but you know, the committee has sometimes counted urgency as an important matter, and sometimes it isn't. So as we see it, disapproval of the RPO is unlikely to have any impact on the department, including use of the drug dog or use of any of the receipts that it generates. The worst case scenario, if you were to approve the RPL, is that you would have, or the department would have, excess, or sometimes called hollow, federal receipts, and we don't consider that to be a serious issue. So we see it as, although the RPO may not be strictly necessary, there's nothing wrong with it.
Representative Sponholz has a question.
I actually have a question for the department on this, based on the analysis that was done by the financial analyst. I don't know if this is the time.
Is Sylvan Robb available? I think that we have Sylvan online right now.
I am here, Mr. Chair.
Oh, okay. All right. Yes, so we have a question for you, Representative Sponholz.
Yeah, so the RPL for the Equitable Sharing Program is to allow for the proceeds of liquidated seized assets that would be have been seized by a drug dog. And my understanding is that drug dogs find illegal drugs, in which case we would have an asset which is illegal to sell. And so how is it that we're requesting funds, we're requesting receipt authority for something that would be illegal to sell?
Through the chair, Representative Sponholz, much of the proceeds that we get through the Equitable Sharing Program are drug-related monies that CODA, our drug dog, finds. So when people have been handling drugs and money, then CODA is able to identify those monies when he's doing searches. So most of what he's found has been money. Also,
so we're not actually selling, we wouldn't be selling money, we would just be essentially receiving the money that was collected.
Through the chair, that's correct.
Senator Onimoff?
So if there are actually drugs seized, and I think we read about it in the paper, sometimes it's drugs in combination with money, in combination with guns and other ammunition and firearms, what is the policy of the department for the actual illegal drugs? Do you just dispose of them and therefore recoup no costs of selling to a secondary market, which I can't imagine what market that would be?
Through the chair, Representative Sponholz, you're of course correct that these are illegal drugs that are being seized, and so they are not being sold. So just for clarity, the Equitable Sharing Program are receipts that the department gets when we are participating with federal law enforcement entities. So if the department is working with the DEA, the FBI, the U.S. Postal Inspectors to find things, then we get a portion of what is found. As I mentioned, usually what is found in these cases is cash. On a few occasions, we have also assisted with finding weapons, and you know, sometimes those are sold. When we're working with these federal agencies, they're normally the primary, and so they are the ones who decide what happens with the illegal contraband that's found.
Any further questions? All right, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Mr. Teal, if you want to walk us through the next one.
Mr. Chairman, the next RPO is 05-2020-0045. And in this RPO, the student and school achievement allocation of the Department of Education and Early Development requests just over $6.5 million in federal receipt authority so that they can issue grants to the Alaska Comprehensive Literacy State Development Program. The grants will be competitive and will apply to children from birth through grade 12, with a focus on economically disadvantaged children. And this RPO brings the department's total federal authorization to just over $162 million. And this grant includes another $3.5 million annually through federal fiscal year 24. So I expect an increment for federal authorization in the FY21 budget process. I guess I also expect the department will continue to lapse unspent federal money. And this probably requires a bit of explanation why they would ask for federal authorization when they're lapsing. And the answer is that the grants are multi-year, they're overlapping, held by several grantees. The department is, or anyone else, is unable to predict exactly when those grant monies will be spent. So the department has to be prepared to release the entire grant in any given year. So they're naturally going to have some excess federal authority because the grantees don't spend all the money at once. But you never know how much goes out when it goes out. So the department is currently reviewing options to either create full-time positions, non-permanent positions, or to contract out to coordinate this additional grant, and no general funds required. We didn't see any technical problems with the RPL.
Okay, thank you. Senator Von Nemeroff has a question.
Thank you. I think this is great news. This is, again, the memo indicated that this money is definitely aligned to the Alaska's education challenge of early literacy. I think the important thing, though, is to make sure that we have a standardized and thorough data collection system. I do know that the school districts, many of them use MAP, M-A-P testing. I don't know if that's the right platform to test these various different programs that may be going into effect through the grant dollars on the different districts. But I think it's important that it's, particularly if it is a three-year, to see some type of growth trend in reading and some accomplishments that these programs can do to get kids to read by third grade and beyond. The NAEP scores just came out in the paper, and we are lagging behind the national average, both in fourth and eighth grade. So I guess the question is what data, or is there a plan for data collection so the program can be tested for effectiveness?
Okay, thank you. And we also have Tamara Van Wy and Neil Steininger on the line, too, for Department of Education for Development. Were you able to hear the question that came forth? Do we have Mr. Steininger and Ms. Van Wy online?
Yes. Yes, and this is Tamara Van Wy online.
And did you hear the comment and the question?
I did, and through the chair, Tamara Van Wy, division director. One of the requirements for the subgrantees is of data collection and reporting system. So when the district's successful in the subgrant competition are collecting their data, it's very specific in terms of early literacy screeners that they'll need for younger students participating in the grants, and then also some kind of formative assessment and interim assessment measures, and that data will be reported to the department so that we can look at trends and help to make adjustments over the course of the five-year grant, and then of course make best practice recommendations to other districts as a result of this project.
Follow up? Okay, any other questions? All right, going on to the next one.
The next RPO is 18-2020-0369. That's the Department of Environmental Conservation, Air Quality Allocation and Division of Air Quality. The EPA, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, awarded a $5 million competitive grant to DEC, and DEC is requesting authorization to add that money to an FY19 capital project. Essentially, the capital project is to replace wood stove in the Fairbanks North Star Borough with less polluting heat sources in residences. And the two existing capital projects for this purpose total about $6.5 million. We asked how much of that was left, and we were told that about 116,000 of those prior year projects is obligated. So they do need additional authority to send the grants out. The grant awards include funding for the borough to conduct outreach and make residents aware of the wood stove changeout program. The best time to conduct that outreach is during the winter when people are using the wood stoves. And there, if we waited, or if the department waited to request authorization during the supplemental process, they would essentially miss the winter season, and that would limit their outreach opportunities and may result in fewer wood stove replacements. Again, no technical problems that we see in this RPO.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, our next one. Oh, got a question from Senator Stidman.
Thank you, Chairman. I'm just curious, because several years ago we put forth a fairly aggressive effort to try to have the older wood stoves removed and the newer catalytic converted wood stoves in place. So is this a continuation of that program? Or is this shifting gears to now try to remove the newer wood stoves to put in heat pumps or some other mechanism to heat a home? I'm just not very familiar with the processes in Fairbanks area, other than I'm aware of the particular issue.
And I don't see anyone from...
Ruth Kostick from the department is in Juneau and is prepared to speak to that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ms. Kostick, did you hear that question?
Yes, thank you. And for the record, this is Ruth Kostick. I'm the Acting Admin Services Director for DEC. This program is a, through the chair, this program is a continuation of prior efforts. This is the third, as Mr. Thiel mentioned, the third such grant we received for this. Prior grants were changing out, prior programs were changing out wood stoves. For various, you were able to change up for cleaner wood stoves or other devices. The grant we received last year and this grant are for changing out wood stoves to non-solid fuel burning devices. So heating oil, hot water, district heat, electric, propane, or natural gas. And this particular grant also allows us to spend money on hooking up houses to a street natural gas system.
Okay, thank you very much. Any other questions? And then on to the next one, Mr. Thiel.
The last RPO is number 25-2020-8718, and it's submitted by the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. it would allow the state equipment fleet in DOT is requesting the committee's approval to spend $1 million to replace two fire trucks at the Whittier Tunnel. The existing trucks are 20 years old, and that's about 5 years past their useful life. And the concern is that a failure of equipment, specifically the fire trucks, could put the department and the state of Alaska at risk of tort liability in the event of a tunnel fire and equipment failure. So the state equipment fleet has highway equipment working capital monies. Well, they have the authority to spend $12.5 million in FY20 to cover the cost of replacing any equipment for all agencies, all executive branch agencies. And this amount is insufficient to cover the regular agency needs and the fire truck replacement. The revenue is on hand to do this. It's available because there are other assets. I think they specifically referred to a fence that's fully depreciated and doesn't need to be replaced for a number of years. The FY20 budget review language for RPLs included the Highway Equipment Working Capital Fund for the first time in FY20, and the intent of that language was to provide an avenue for the department to access additional money for replacement of essential state equipment, and of course this RPL falls right in line with that intent language, and we see no technical problems.
Okay, thank you. I got a question from Representative Johnson.
Is there anybody from the department online? Or
yes, we should have Gordon Burton, the facilities manager for the Whittier Access Tunnel, and then Dom Anone, the administrative service director for that department.
I understand the need for replacement, and I understand, you know, when a vehicle is fully depreciated. I'm just interested as far as the amount of usage of these vehicles. Sometimes replacing them because they're 20 years old. I mean, how do you benchmark their effectiveness and as far as what they do? Is it by age or is it by what they're able to do?
This is Gordon Burton, facilities manager, speaking through the chair. We're looking at the vehicles based on age, based on the ability to keep them serviceable. We're using these vehicles on an average about once every 5 years. We have not fought a fire in the tunnel with these vehicles, knock on wood. With a fire in the tunnel, it's a matter of when we're going to have one. The current vehicles, you know, as I said, they're getting old. The newer vehicles, we're actually stepping down and readjusting to a vehicle that's more in line with our needs.
Follow up. And do you, I mean, as in past practices, you sell these to other public governments around the state?
The state equipment fleet does surplus those. I believe they have a program for allowing other agencies to pick up those vehicles and use them.
Okay, thank you. It seems rather odd because they're barely used and they've hit their age requirement, but it still seems that maybe there's other ways to spend the money.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
From the service grievance previous comments, it seemed like the concern was expressed that they're, you know, 5 years past their depreciation schedule, whatever depreciation schedule it is. But if you're 5 years out or 4 years out, if there was such an emergency, why weren't they in front of the Finance Subcommittees on the Senate side, being chaired by Senator Bishop, expressing concern with these fire trucks when he has spent many hours working on the equipment fleet working capital fund. I think it'd be more appropriate to have these type of issues in front of the subcommittees. And we were going to start up here in 2 months anyway. So I just doesn't seem the most appropriate way of dealing with the issue. And if there's, you know, health safety concerns and the end of October, 1st of November, they certainly should have had the same concerns in March of this year.
Oh, thank you, Senator Stedman. You care to comment, Mr. Burton?
This is Gordon Burton again, through the chair. These engines, they were bought through a capital's grant during the construction, so they weren't on any sort of a replacement cycle. We've been approaching this question through our management, and it's just now come to the surface.
Yes, Mr. Senator Stedman.
Health safety issues with some of the marine highway vessels with some of their steel plates, and I don't see them in front of us. We're waiting for the next budget cycle. They're more apt to sink than a fire in a tunnel.
Yeah.
If they can. They sink at the dock.
Vice Chair Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Burton, can you give us some examples of some of the repair costs on these fire trucks? As I read the report, I do have some experience in emergency response and dealing with fire service vehicles, and you mentioned that 20-year-old vehicles getting parts for these are getting hard to get. You got any? Can you just give the committee any off the top of your head ideas where some valves are unobtainium anymore, or et cetera?
This is Gordon Burke. One of the things that these are very specialized trucks. They are equipped with rail gear and infrared sensors for traveling in the tunnel in a dark smoke environment. One of the things that we had difficulties with was the infrared package that was on the truck was out of date. We had one truck that went several months where we didn't have the sensor package on it while they worked through trying to retrofit a package to it. We've had issues where there are switches, latches, and things like that that they've had difficulties finding those parts for. The rail gear on it, we had an issue where the rail gear was having to be left in a pinned up situation because the parts weren't available and they had to have, I believe, a cylinder built for it. So.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions or discussion? Okay. We're going to go ahead and take a motion for all of these RPLs. If somebody objects and wants to pull one out. Representative Josephson.
The Chair, since we're going to go into the motion at this time, Mr. Thiel, my question for you is about the federal receipts. And I guess what I'm curious about is how a legislator can know what federal receipts were available but not sought by the administration for any purpose.
Through the Chair, Representative Josephson, we publish reports at a fairly detailed level about the authorized level authorized funding available at the allocation level. So you know how much was available to them. You also would see what their actual expenditures were. The difference between those two should tell you that their expenditures are getting close to the amount that was authorized, which would alert you to some dangers that they might be having RPL needs or should just increase federal authorization in order to keep them from coming to LBNA or avoid. It's not that you don't want them to come to LBNA, it's just that as Senator Stedman has said, sometimes these things are, legislators prefer that they come before the Finance Committee and be more fully discussed. In the case of corrections, for example, it would be very hard for legislative finance or for legislators to tell what, where they are if they're going to be not requesting federal authorization, and because they don't request it, they don't spend it, so it wouldn't show up on your expenditure report, and therefore the authorization on the books may appear sufficient. That is what happened in the FY20 budget cycle. They were leaving federal receipts unclaimed, and they've addressed that problem now with the addition of $3 million of federal receipts. So there is no easy way for you to see exactly what's going on, but there are reports that should help you spot problems, and then of course the only way you're really going to spot these problems would be discussions in subcommittee at a pretty detailed level.
As to existing programs and lapsed funds and things that are itemized that we can see, I see your point, but there are some one-time opportunities that I'm curious about, and would your answer apply to those as well, or would we just be blind as to whether there are opportunities an agency could seek that they waive?
Through the chair, there are a number of one-time opportunities. A good example would be Rasmussen Foundation grants to the Department of Education. They were one-time grants, and then the next year it was another one-time grant, and it's same in year three and year four, and finally the department says, well, we think or hope that these grants will continue. Let's get them out of the LBNA committee purview and go ahead and put them in the budget. So sometimes it takes a few years of one-time needs for money before they recognize that it's more than a one-time need.
Okay, thank you.
Vice Chair Bishop.
Thank you. This is for DOT, Mr. Burton.
Yes, I'm online.
Okay, so now going forward after this acquisitions are made for these two fire trucks, so you're going to start deducting annual rent from the Whittier Access Tunnel receipts going forward for the replacement of the trucks in the future?
Through the chair, yes, sir. Yes, sir, that is the intent.
Thank you.
And Mr. Burton, I have a question. On those two fire trucks, I know that the Whittier Tunnel is contracted out the operations of that. Does that contractor also, are they responsible for the operations of these two fire trucks?
Yes, through the chair. Yes, they are responsible for the operations of the fire trucks, but they are not responsible for the maintenance on the fire trucks that's conducted through SDF.
And do they, all the other fleet that they have, I noticed they have some loaders, they have regular pickup trucks and everything, are those state-owned? Is that state-owned equipment, or is that private contractor equipment?
We have loaders and a grader and a blower that belong to the state, some pickup trucks that belong to the state, and one of them is in Girdwood. Pickup trucks that the contractor uses on site belongs to him.
And then my last question, the fencing, replacement of the fencing, what fund was that originating out of?
That was coming out of the toll receipts, and that was going towards the, it's actually a geotech net that goes into the crown to control for rocks. Currently, we've got a federal project, and it's working on the crown. They're installing some drip pans and some shotcrete, which is going to extend that crown fencing for at this point it's not determined. So.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Mr. Vice Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the following FY20 RPLs. Number 08-2020/0105, U.S. EPA Multipurpose Grant. Second one is RPL 20-2020-0050, Equitable Sharing Program. Number three, RPL number 05-2020-0045, Alaska Comprehensive Literacy and State Development Program. RPL number 18-2020-0369, Fairbanks PM 2.5 Non-Attainment Area Voluntary Heating Device Changeout Program. And the last one, RPL number 25-2020-8718, Whittier Tunnel Fire Truck Replacement.
Any objections? Hearing and seeing no objections, the committee has approved the FY 2020 RPLs. And now the next order of business that we have is going into executive session. Mr. Vice Chair.
With the Legislative Budget Audit Committee, go into executive session under Uniform Rule Number 22B3, discussion of matters that may, by law, be required to be confidential. I ask that the following persons remain in the room or on the phone. Legislative auditor and necessary staff to the auditor. Any legislators not on the committee. And staff for legislators who are members of the committee. And David Thiel.
Okay, hearing no objection, we will go into executive session after a brief at ease to clear the room. Okay, we'll call the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee hearing back in order. It is at 12:45. We're out of the executive session. And with that, Vice Chair Bishop.
Mr. Chairman, I move the following preliminary audits be released to the agencies for response. Department of Natural Resources, Alaska Seismic Hazard Safety Commission Sunset Audit, Department of Corrections, Board of Parole Sunset Audit, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Medical Board Sunset Audit, Department of Fish and Game, Board of Game Regulatory Process Special Audit.
Okay, hearing no objections. The preliminary audits that have been listed will be released to the agencies for their response. Mr. Vice Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee terminate the Tustamina Overhaul and Refurbishment Audit, which was approved by the committee February 2014.
And I will object for the purpose of discussion. Ms. Curtis, if you don't mind, just give us a quick overview of that memo, just so the public understands what we're doing.
Sure. For the record, my name is Chris Curtis. I'm your state legislative auditor. So the Tustamina went into a overhaul and refurbishment project in 2012. There were extensive delays. It was widely published in the paper, the problems with the project. It caused the vessel to be out of service for over a year. So in response to concerns about that project, an audit was requested, and it was approved at the February 2014 Legislative Budget and Audit Committee meeting. And it was approved with the understanding that the audit would be set down in the event the state entered into litigation over the project. So that did end up, the state did end up entering litigation, and the audit was set down. The litigation was settled in 2017. My office did not pick up the audit due to competing priorities with the single audit and the CAFR audits and the implementation of the new state's new accounting system. and the drain on resources of that cause. So we are in the process of being able to, or in the position to be able to pick it back up and begin, but given how long it's been since it was originally approved and the changes out there associated with the marine highway system, and I just wanted to bring it back to the committee and ask for your guidance regarding whether we should be using audit resources now, since litigation has been completed, whether we should move forward, and whether that should be one of our priorities.
Thank you very much. Any further discussions or questions? I will remove my objection. Any further objections? Okay. Hearing and seeing no further objections, the testimony overhaul and refurbishment audit, which was approved by the committee in February 2014, will now be terminated. Is there any other further business to come before the committee? Hearing and seeing none, we are adjourned at roughly 12:50 on October 31st.